The term resistance historically conjures up groups like the French people who chafed at the overlordship of the Nazis during World War II. But resistance took on a new meaning for many Americans as Donald Trump moved into the White House, solidifying Republican and conservative control of the two political branches of government. The day after Trump moved in, protesters moved out to the streets of many American cities, and the demonstrations have continued since. Those include vocal crowds greeting members of Congress at town hall meetings. Let's visit with representatives from two of the groups making a fair amount of activity in Southern Oregon. Jessica Sage is with the Oregon District 2 chapter of Indivisible. She is a co-founder and a member of the board. Jessica, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Great to be here.
Andrew Sellis is with us as well. He is the chair of Our Revolution for Jackson County. Andy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff, for having us.
There's a bit of a pedigree, actually, that comes with Our Revolution. Why don't we start with you, and you can tell us the story of the formation of Our Revolution.
Yeah, we're really the successor to the Bernie Sanders campaign. In fact, I often have to explain to people when they ask, what is Our Revolution? And I have to explain that we're a legacy organization. This was the group that a lot of the people that were involved in the Sanders campaign formed after his candidacy.
And Jessica Sage, how did Indivisible crop up?
Well, like so many people, we all woke up after the election feeling anger, dismay, frustration, shock. And Indivisible was written by some former congressional aides in Washington. It's a very, very simple blueprint that is very close to what the Tea Party did in 2008. And they wrote what's called the Indivisible Guide. And as soon as I read it, it was a light bulb went out. I got out of my depression. Exactly. Got out of my depression and immediately took action. This is a very, very it's a small focus where we contact our members of Congress and we let them know exactly how we're feeling about what's going in Washington today. And we've already seen enormous success in the 4 months we've been around.
You've already answered a question for much further down the list, and that was how much you have adhered to the Tea Party template, and it mm-hmm. sounds like a fair amount.
Absolutely, yeah. They had a winning formula. They were very successful, and we are already seeing a lot of success in our movement.
Why do you suppose it took until after the election, though, to get people this interested?
Well, of course, that's the million-dollar question. I don't think a lot of people thought that he would win. And when he did, I think a lot of people went into all kinds of reaction, and now we're taking very concrete steps to make sure we resist as much of not only the Trump agenda, but the GOP agenda as possible. I didn't think that the GOP would be following Trump around like the Pied Piper, and they are, and we're letting them know all over the country. You see what happens in town hall meetings. People are going and picketing offices. We had Resist Trump Tuesdays for the first 100 days of it's hard for me to say presidency, but we're not backing down. We're growing stronger and stronger every day, every week, and we're not going to stop anytime soon.
Andy Sellis, your nods of agreement are threatening to knock you out of your chair. So why don't you detail what's been happening to you since the election?
Well, you know, we call it, in Southern Oregon at least, we emphasize the evolution part of our revolution because I think we are evolving as a country. I think we're becoming actually more postpartisan because there's some agreement on the right as well as on the left about what we need to do. So we kind of think of ourselves as progressive populists. Trump had sold himself as a conservative populist and is essentially playing the working class families. We're dedicated to economic justice for working families, regardless of race, gender, class, social, or cultural origin, regardless of religion, disability, lifestyle, or circumstances, including their political affiliation. So we're reaching out to everyone. We want to transform politics, and essentially we're Bernie Redux, if you will.
Postpartisan sounds a little optimistic, given the general tenor of the times in the last 20 or even 30 years.
Right. I think if you watch mainstream media, you might tend to think that way because they've...
I thought I was mainstream media. Go ahead.
No, I think you're more alternative. But if you look at what has happened in this country in the last 30, 40 years, what is sometimes referred to as neoliberalism, essentially laissez-faire capitalism on steroids, there's been almost a fire sale of moving our economy from the public to the private sector. And I understand JPR is going through this to some degree with the loss of funding. But this all started, without getting too wonky, but it really started back in the Carter administration, believe it or not. I believe he deregulated, and I can't remember which industry it was.
He began the deregulation of railroads.
Railroads, that's correct. Thanks, Jeff.
Sure.
And then, of course, Reagan with his deregulation. And then we get into the Clinton administration and the deregulation of telecommunications and so forth. So removal of Glass-Steagall. Any number of things. So it was a movement toward globalism, and this is what you see people reacting to.
We're talking to two of the major component groups in the so-called resistance in Southern Oregon. Andy Sellis is the chair of Our Revolution for Jackson County, which sprang out of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Jessica Sage is co-founder and board member of the Oregon District 2 chapter of Indivisible. This is a conversation you're welcome to join on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts, comments, questions, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We have one email already. Deborah and Talent says, I am worried that the different resistance groups in District 2 aren't working together enough to effectively reach the goal of electing a Democrat to Congress. Please tell me I am wrong. That again from Deborah and Talent. Jessica Sage, your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks, Deborah. We in Oregon District 2 have 33 Indivisible chapters, and we're actually all coming together next weekend for a weekend retreat that we're going to set strategy. We're going to talk about ways to defeat Walden in next year in 2018, and we're really coming together. In fact, Andy and I just talked before we went on air about joining forces and doing things. So I think that all of these groups are rather new. We're all sort of finding our legs. And I think our next step is absolutely to start merging and partnering with like-minded organizations. I mean, we've already done that. You know, we were at the We the People rally, the Climate Bash, the Tax March. We're working with Racial Equality Coalition, and we're absolutely going to be joining forces.
To the nub of the result that Deborah seeks here, which apparently is the removal of Greg Walden, I mean, the fact is that this is something that is often assumed to be relatively impossible, given that District 2 is two counties, actually really one county west of the Cascades, Jackson County and a good bit of the Grants Pass metro area, and then everything east of the Cascades with a huge bulge in Republican registration, which is assumed to mean it's impossible for a Democrat to get elected.
I think that has been true historically, and I think we're living in different times right now. I think because of Trump and because of Walden's insistence on chummying up to him in Washington, it's angered a lot of his constituents. And we're finding, I have watched the town hall meetings in Bend, in Hood River, in Grants Pass. I was at the town hall in Medford. Times are different, Jeffrey. People are angry. They're rising up like never before. They're getting involved, and they're finally wanting to hold Walden accountable for his actions. He has gotten more and more conservative in his 19 years in office, and I think that people are starting to get really, really angry and upset. And now we want change. There's no question. Walden is out of touch with his constituents, and we want to replace him next year.
Is there a particular tone you're trying to set? I guess I'm trying to figure out how you get your message across and still appear to be polite enough to be something people would consider wanting to join. I ask this in part because of the letters to the editor I still see from time to time in the Mail Tribune that take issue with the way that the word indivisible was pounced on reciting the Pledge of Allegiance at the Medford Walden Town Hall.
Right. Well, we have a mission statement, and part of our mission statement is modeling the values of honesty, inclusion, tolerance, and fairness. We are at Walden's office every week. We are polite to his staffers. I've met with Walden. I am civil. I am polite, but I'm also direct, and I'm very insistent on asking him questions and demanding answers because he's working for us. He's working for his constituents, and I don't see him doing a very good job. So we are polite, but we're also insistent.
Andy Sellis, has our revolution taken part in some of the same activities as Indivisible, or are you taking some different tactics?
Well, some of our members, and in fact, I've gone to resist rallies. I was also at the Medford Town Hall, and yes, there was a standing ovation when people talked about single-payer health care. So there is a movement here that is, can I say, transpartisan or postpartisan for some of these things. Our focus is more on getting people elected locally to school boards, again, emulating the Tea Party, getting them in local politics and building a bench for the future. So we're probably less focused on Greg Walden per se, mm-hmm. although we certainly support the efforts to remove him.
There are school board elections going on in May, and in fact, the ballot
right.
will probably go out today.
Right.
And have you managed to get some people on the slates in the Rogue Valley?
Well, you know, we got a late start. So I actually went to a Democratic meeting last night and saw some of the candidates. They look pretty good. That's not an endorsement. Yet in the future, we will be endorsing candidates.
Okay, let's grab your headphones. I want to take some calls here. Let's start out with Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Andy Sellis from Our Revolution and Jessica Sage from Indivisible.
Thank you. I'm all for the things that you're doing. I'll soon be 75, and I've been watching politics since 1948. So the two things that I've seen that make a difference in politics are money and votes. And votes usually follow the money. Most billionaires in the United States are right-wing. They now control all three branches of government, plus the media, except for public broadcasting and the New York Times. So I think we can learn a lesson from the funding for Bernie's campaign that small contributions can add up to big money. And one thing I think you should emphasize is that in Oregon, you can donate $50 to one or several political causes and then take that off of your state income taxes. So in the end, it doesn't cost you a dime. And if everybody in Oregon contributed $50 to good causes like yours, we would see a big change. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ann. Appreciate that. There was a reference there directly to the Bernie funding model, so why don't you have your response, Andy?
Well, she just reminded me that I forgot to do that. Well, yeah, and this all goes back to the 2010 Citizens United decision, which just opened the floodgates to super PACs and so forth, unlimited campaign contributions. And I might add, unlimited funding from foreign trade associations. So you have foreign money influencing our elections.
What are your thoughts about money on elections, and how big a part of the Indivisible platform is that, Jessica Sage?
Well, it is definitely an endemic problem, and none of us like it. And it's going to be a long haul before we reform campaign finance and the way it works. And the second part of the caller's comments were getting out the vote. And that's what we're going to be focusing on. We're going to be working on phone banks and walking the districts. And we're doing a lot of, we're going to be doing a lot of education and getting out the vote. And hopefully we'll get some good people in there that'll start changing things. But I agree, it's endemic and it's a big, big problem.
Jessica Sage is with Indivisible, Andy Sellis with Our Revolution. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Livia in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. One of the reasons I'm calling is there are many ways to resist, and after the election of Donald Trump, I decided I was going to start doing it with my art. I'm a local play producer, and right now, this weekend and the next two, I'm opening God's Country tonight at the Bellevue Grange. And for those who don't know God's Country, it was written by Stephen Dietz. It was commissioned after the murder of Jewish talk show host Alan Berg by a white supremacist group called The Order. And I don't think people realize how dangerous the a lot of the rhetoric that is being used is. According to the Anti-Defamation League, anti-Semitic hate crimes are up 86% in the first 3 months of 2017. And it's fake news, it's Alex Jones kind of news that allow this kind of hatred to spread. And one of the reasons I'm putting on this show in judgment at Nuremberg later on in the summer is because I feel we need to remember the dangers of what we can lose in this country, because patriotism means that we were all immigrants. We all came from immigrants. And as soon as we use hatred instead of truth, we are really, really hurting this country that we say we love.
All right, Livia, thanks for that. Appreciate it. So, Jessica, that was quite a reaction. Are you surprised that she was plugging it, or surprised that we've come to the point where people are doing plays like this?
Well, I'm an artist too, mm-hmm. and I'm happy that Livia turned her rage into art. When I had finished a play on Sunday, and Tuesday the election hit, and I couldn't get out of bed. I'm about now starting to feel my creative juices flow again. But more power to the artists that are using this to heal their wounds, because it's a big, big cut.
So how much, I mean, both of you guys were involved, I'm sure, with the various marches on the day after Inauguration Day in the region, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what other events since? And then what else is coming up? What are some of the events you have coming up?
Well, thanks for asking. We, now that we have finished the 100 days and we're no longer doing the weekly resists.
So your Tuesday visit, that's over now?
The people want them. And we feel it's very, very important now that we have, I mean, we've got over 3,000 people in our indivisible ORD2 indivisible right now. We've got two very active Facebook pages. We've got a website, ORD2indivisible.org, where we disseminate a lot of information. And we're also doing a lot of bridge building. So, for example, tomorrow is the People's March for Climate, Jobs, and Justice. And by the way, that's going to be 3 p.m. tomorrow at Pear Blossom Park at the Commons in Medford. And we're going to continue to have rallies. We're going to continue to have intro meetings. We've already had a couple of intro meetings. People still don't know about Indivisible. So we have had a couple of meetings in Ashland, in Medford, in Grants Pass, and Klamath Falls. We're going to be going out to Eagles Point. We're going to be having membership meetings. And we're always looking for opportunities to keep our activists and our volunteers alive and fresh and invigorated. You know, I say all the time, we're in this for the long haul. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And people aren't used to what it takes to be an activist. So we want to continue to keep them engaged. But if people are interested in finding out about what we are all about, our website's the best place to go. And we also have, as I said, those Facebook pages.
All right, I'm glad you brought that up about the long haul, because I was going to ask about how to keep up energy and enthusiasm. In other words, not end up like Occupy, which
right.
had huge momentum, mm-hmm. but was not even a factor in the election the year after Occupy happened. Andy, how do you keep people interested?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. This is, our revolution is actually Occupy 3.0. Because if you think about it, we had Occupy, and then we had the Bernie Sanders campaign. And now we have our revolution. You know, we've already elected a chair of the Democratic Party in Nebraska. We've got a progressive caucus chair in Michigan, a Democratic Party chair in Colorado. Here in Oregon, people don't know this, we just took 3 out of 4 Democratic Party leadership seats at the state level. That includes the 2 vice chairs and a secretary. And California has a Democratic state party chair election in May. So we're building. It's a nuts and bolts thing. And Jessica's absolutely right. This is a marathon. So we're building for the long run.
All right. Let's take a call from Tony and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jessica Sage and Andy Sellis.
About the question of good morning, by the way. About the question of money in politics, it's worth reminding you guys that Clinton spent twice as much as Trump did on her campaigns. And I agree with you that you have to change the Democratic Party, because it's going nowhere. But I'm sure that this is American tendency to have to relearn the rest of the world's mistakes. The world is turning to the right. It's fairly obvious. I mean, if you want to emulate Venezuela, go ahead with your Bernie Sanders type shtick. But really, if the Democratic Party wants to be ever elected in numbers again, and it's not just presidential, but you look at all the other elections, it's fairly obvious they have to take a turn towards realism. Look at what's happening in Britain. Look what's happening in France. you're going in the wrong direction.
Okay, we have two volunteers for responses here. We'll start with Andy because...
I mean, this is what I call the pragmatic cynicism of the liberal left. And it's all about, you know, incremental change. Well, we've had incremental change over the last 30 or 40 years, and that we've been like the frog in the pot boiling. And that what is what has gotten us to the sorry state we're there in. This we don't. The answer to conservative centrism isn't. I'm sorry. I get all worked up about this. But
so is the world.
The answer isn't right wing centrism. That isn't the answer. And what you're seeing is a reaction because there's no there. There's no alternative. The liberal side isn't actually offering a viable alternative.
Okay.
No, I don't believe that the world is turning right. I feel like a lot of the politics are turning right. When I see all over the country these representatives speaking so far right of the people they're representing, not just in District 2, all over the country. I mean, I have been inundating myself with what's going on in the world, really for the first time. It's a little disheartening, but... what I'm seeing is people are saying, come back. We are not that conservative. So it's not the world turning right. It's, yes, the money and politics turning right. But we, the power of the people and the success of Indivisible is about people taking their power, using their voices in a way to let their members of Congress know that we are not going away. We mean business. So I have a lot of faith in what's going to happen in the future.
And I have a lot of belief we'll be hearing more from both of you from Indivisible Oregon District 2. Jessica Sage is the co-founder and a board member. Andy Sellis is the Our Revolution Chair for Jackson County. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.